This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. You know, Broadway can be a mystical place, ornate costumes, incredible talent. But for one man who has seen all sides of showbiz, the magic of Broadway can be approached as any craft with the technical details that can be broken down and even taught. Seth Rudesky has played piano for more than a dozen Broadway shows. He's directed and coached performers. He's also been on stage himself. Used his inside knowledge to create a one-man show called Deconstructing Broadway. Dissects the highs and the lows of vocal performance. Tonight he's going to bring that show to PSI Theater in Durham, Durham Arts Council. But first, Seth Rudesky. Welcome
Hello.
To State of Things. Good to have you here. So, Nee, you've been in Broadway for a long time. What was your aspiration? What did you want to do there? What brought you there?
I think I kind of wanted to do everything, but I knew that I'd have my easiest in if I worked as a pianist because I was a piano major at Oberlin. So I got my start as a pianist for a lot of Broadway shows like Les Mis and Phantom. And then by the time I started writing and performing, it was easier for me to break in because I kind of knew everybody on the scene.
Right, and so I guess your first role in theater was the summer of your third grade. Am I right about that?
Yes, I was very good. I was the Cowardly Lion at the Hillel Jewish Summer Day Camp. Anybody? Crickets. But that was my first my first quote unquote gig, and by gig, one night performance.
All right, so you did that, and then Cindy, you studied music, obviously, right?
Yes, piano
and you played. So you've been on Broadway. You've been kind of behind the scenes. You've been in the pit, right?
Yes.
Playing a little bit.
Many years.
And are you kind of paying attention? Because right now your show kind of breaks down. The nuts and bolts, particularly vocal performance. Do you find yourself always paying attention to kind of the minutia?
Oh, yeah, because when you're on Broadway and you're in the orchestra, a lot of times you actually wear headphones. And mostly the other musicians there were just regular musicians, and they'd have like the drums turned up and the saxophone. They'd only have the orchestra turned up. I'd have the whole orchestra turned down, and I would just turn up the vocal mics because I'd be completely obsessed. Like my first show was Les Mis, and Andrew McArdle, Broadway's original Annie, was playing Fantine, and I remember I was blasting her into my headphones. So I've always been completely obsessed with the vocals on Broadway.
All right, so now and tell us what else you've done, because we talked about music, but you've done other things.
Oh, brother! Well, am I allowed to say them on the radio? Even though this is another radio station, that's my main job. Is on
you're on Sirius. Oh, nobody listens to that.
You okay, good. I'm on something called Sirius XM Radio. It's a Kickstarter campaign. They're trying to get it going.
Yeah.
A young upstart named Howard Stern. Anyway, so that's my main gig, is a Broadway host on that. But I mean, I've done a lot of stuff. I was a comedy writer on the Rosie O'Donnell Show. I wrote for the Tony Awards. I have a musical that I wrote that's actually coming to Broadway called Disaster, which is like a 1970s disaster movie as a musical, and that's supposed to open on Broadway in the fall. So I kind of keep my hands in many different pies.
Mm-hmm. And the show is great. You play show music, but then once a week you kind of
I interview people too on the radio show. You mean?
Yeah, your radio show.
Yeah, I have a once a week interview called Seth Speaks, and I interview Broadway stars, and you know I'm obsessed with asking them about mishaps. That's kind of my favorite thing, is to talk about, to kind of, you know, that's the fun thing about Broadway, is that it's live and something is always going wrong, and everyone has an amazing story.
Yeah, that never happens on this show, by the way.
No, that's what's amazing about NPR. Things are clean as a whistle.
Nothing ever goes wrong. Okay, so favorite mishaps you've been interviewing for a while. Give us a couple examples.
Well, the show that I did the longest on Broadway, I guess, was Phantom of the Opera. And so I have plenty of stories about that. I guess one is at the very end of the show. Spoiler alert, but by the way, if you haven't seen it, you've had 20 years. So come on, man.
Yeah.
The end of the show, the Phantom, he covers himself with like a big sheet. And the ballet dancer's looking for him. She's like, where is he? Where is he? And then she pulls off the sheet and he's gone. And just his mask is there. And it's like this weird, mysterious, like, where did he go? And the curtain falls. Well, cut to, he's supposed to do this weird trick where he disappears. And one night he was doing it. It didn't work and he didn't disappear. And the sheet was covering him and he didn't want her to pull it off. So he was whispering, no, no. But it was through the blanket. So she thought he was saying, go, go. So she pulled the blanket off and he was just sitting there awkwardly, and the audience is like, wait, what? Curtain. So that's A.
I paid $85. Oh, go ahead.
Basically. Yeah. And then I guess I'll talk about my own mishap. Mm. I'll own it. I was doing Phantom of the Opera, playing in the orchestra. It's one of the few shows that actually has a real piano. Those were the days. Anyway, I was playing the real piano, and at one point, Christine pulls the mask off the Phantom. I was playing, and I heard like clank, clunkety, clinkety, clankety, clunk. And I'm like, what the H? Is someone tap dancing? And it turns out when she flung the mask off, it bounced off the stage into the pit next to my keyboard and the Phantom's mask. So naturally, you know, I put it on. So I put on the mask because it was so cool. It was the mask. But then I was playing, you know, the bum, ba, 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 ba. And I'm like, oh my God, I am the Phantom. It's like I'm trying to get a laugh out of the viola section because they're so uptight. And like, no, everyone's ignoring me. I'm like, you guys, I'm the Phantom. And finally, I looked over at the conductor and he was actually on the phone, not like on his cell phone, but you can talk to the stage manager from the conducting pit. So he's talking on the stage manager phone, and I see him look over at me and he's like furious. He's like, take it off. Okay, so note to the wise. the Phantom's mask is not one of those masks you buy in the Broadway store. It's actually made of this like pliable material that molds specifically to the Phantom's face. So when I put it on, let's just say that I'm Jewish and it didn't ever fit him again. Let's just leave it there. Enough said.
Well, and already the emails from violists are coming in.
Well, you know what? They got to cheer up. They are downers. Let's be honest.
So talk about this deconstructing show. What's behind it? How did that all come together?
Deconstructing began because literally ever since I was a small child, I've been obsessed with Broadway and with music. And I remember calling up my friend Michael Smith. I mean, I remember this so clearly. I was in sixth grade and Nell Carter was belting Ain't Misbehavin'. And the end of Cash for Your Trash. He goes, get some cash for your trash. And I held the phone next to the record player. And I said, oh my God, she's belting an E. And I know he was like, I don't know what belting is. I don't know what an E is. I'm 11. I'm straight. What's happening? Anyway, but the point is, I wanted him to know. So I've always been obsessed with showing people like, this is what's amazing about this song. Do you hear that vibrato? Do you hear it? So my whole life I've been doing that. And then I began, when I was on the Rosie O'Donnell show, I began doing stand-up on the side. And part of my act, I just was like, oh, kind of do what you know. So instead of doing it in my living room for my friends, I began to incorporate it into my show, these little snippets of playing music or showing videos. Like I show the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, which is devastating. But I'd always have friends over. We'd always watch the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. And I would deconstruct Alice, who literally does a full dance solo to Shake Your Booty. The point is, I would always deconstruct the stuff for my friends, and I put it into my comedy show. And then one afternoon, I did it in a big benefit on Broadway, this kind of big fundraiser. And I did this snippet, and Rosie O'Donnell was in the audience, and she said, if you do a whole show of just that, she's like, I will produce it. So I compiled a whole show of just my deconstructing. P.S. She never produced it. I think she completely forgot what she said and still angry about that. But the point is, it gave me the show, and now I wound up doing it like all over the country.
Well, let's get a sample here and give us an idea, because I think what we're going to do now is you're going to compare, actually, Patti LuPone and Madonna's performances, right?
Yes, it drives me crazy. Okay, so Patti LuPone is now, like most 13-year-old kids, by the way, I got the album of Evita for my bar mitzvah. So I had the album and I was obsessed listening to it. And the one thing I loved the most was Rainbow High. So I'm going to play this one moment. This is the modulation from the song. And the modulation means changing keys, which is something Barry Manilow invented in the 70s. So the point is, instead of going, I'm their savior, she goes, I'm their savior. But she holds savior. It's a C sharp and she adds vibrato. She goes, I'm their savior. So I want you to hear how brilliant that is. Then I'm going to deconstruct Madonna. So why don't we hit it?
I'm their savior.
So thrilling. Okay, now, I'm going to counteract that with Madonna in the movie. So instead of going, I'm their savior, first of all, she's two steps down. So she's like, I'm their savior. Second of all, she had a cold that day, didn't take her Claritin, but she's, I'm their savior. And instead of savior, she just goes, I'm their savior. So she doesn't sustain it. She falls off of it as if she tripped over her heel in the recording studio. And they're like, Madonna, we've got to keep it moving. Time is money. She's like, but my name is Esther. Okay, so we're going to compare and contrast. This is Patti hitting the C-sharp, holding it for broadening it versus Madonna, horrible, falling off the note with a cold. Okay, hit it, please.
I'm their savior.
Versus.
I'm their savior.
Come on. What the hell is that? Okay, so in case you missed it out there in Radio Land, I'm going to do just a compare and contrast. This is word to word, syllable to syllable. Listen how devastating this is. Hit it, please. Now, why is that allowed? And why can people go, Madonna was great in the movie? No, she wasn't, and there is the proof. Next question.
Oh, Seth, that was a brilliant analysis, I think, and finely wrought. I didn't hear it. I mean, so here's the thing.
Vion. How do you not hear the difference between that?
I heard the difference, but here's my question to you. So Vox Populi, Vox Dei, right? In other words, you caught it, and you are right. And I'm guessing if a vocalist came to you and said, Seth, how can I improve my performance? You would have made that recommendation, they'd have made the change, and it would have improved.
Yes.
However, when it comes time for Madonna to belt out that whatever it was she belted out.
Well, fell off of it with a cold. But
fell off
on.
Her heel with a cold.
Yeah.
The people who love Madonna will say, I just love her.
No. Here's the deal. And David Merrick said this. He said, an audience doesn't know what it didn't get, but they do know when they get it. So you are correct. Meaning they can see the movie. They can go, wow, she was great. However, if she sounded like Patti, it's a completely different visceral feeling. And I'll tell you, I do this volunteer work. For like 20 years I've been doing it for AIDS patients in hospitals. And they're very, very poor. They're basically homeless people. And we bring in these Broadway singers. And they don't know. And I brought in Betty Buckley, John Secada. I brought in these big stars. They don't know the difference. But when certain people hit certain notes, you see them in the audience freak out. So they're not thinking, oh my God, that vibrato is amazing. But there is a visceral human feeling. So I'm sort of analyzing for my audience, this is why when you hear Patty, she sounds so much better to you. So I agree, when they see Madonna, they go, oh, she's fine. But you can't help, you can't deny that when you hear Patty, you go, oh my God, that's thrilling.
Yeah, and I think what you're doing is great, because it really does tell us what it is about a performance that makes us light up, and when we're a little ambivalent. And it's very cool. And to be a better educated consumer is always a good thing. In fact, I'd like to unleash you on politics so that we can actually figure out how those guys are fooling us all the time.
Believe me, that makes my head – politics make my head come off, because I hate double talk. I mean, it all makes me crazy. So do not unleash me. I'll have a breakdown.
If I am wise, I will not get you started on that.
Thank you.
You deconstruct Whitney Houston's famous rendition of I Will Always Love You.
Yes. You know, thank you for bringing that up. I'm obsessed with vibrato, and American Idol, anytime someone uses vibrato, they're like, yo, you sound like a Broadway singer, meaning you sound good. So I'm going to show you why vibrato is good. It's not good to constantly – by the way, what is vibrato? Vibrato, instead of like, ah, it's ah. And you don't want a vibrato every single note. You're not the kind of crazy person at the birthday party that's like, you know, happy birthday to you. Sound like a crazy person or Katharine Hepburn. You want to use vibrato in a smart way. And what it is the straight tone. The ah is the tension. The ah is the release. And Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You, this is the classic example. People listen to this. They go, oh my God, what a thrilling song. She sounds amazing after the modulation. One of the reasons why she sounds amazing is because she is straight toning one note, vibratoing the second. She is tension, release. Tension. I don't think she consciously thought, I'm going to do this, but it makes that phrase sound so beautiful. So it's straight tone, vibrato, straight tone, vibrato, and it is so exciting to listen to. Okay, why don't we hear it? Hit it, please.
And
straight tone. Vibrato. Straight tone. Vibrato. Straight tone. Vibrato. Straight riff vibrato. Vibrato. Head voice, not interested. Yes.
So what is it about vibrato, do you think? I mean, it does mimic.
It's release.
And vibrato, don't you think, I mean, it mimics a real emotional quality. I mean, like when we're crying, when we're really sad, we can tell on the phone that mama's really upset because now her voice is shaking, right?
That's so interesting. I never thought of that. Your mother's always like, what? Yeah, totally not. I'm totally thinking of my mother. She's like, your plane was late. She asked vibrato. Wait, that's an amazing analysis. Turns out, join my show.
You can, no. Just go ahead, steal that thing and go ahead and use
bit.
It. So, Barbara Streisand, you took on Barbara Streisand. Seth?
I am obsessed with Barbara Streisand. So this is, well, I guess it is from a place of dishing. But the point is, I am obsessed with her, and there is so much about her that's brilliant. And one of the things I'm obsessed with her about is that she gets away with so much. She gets away with stuff because she's so brilliant, and no one tries to stop her. So this is actually the clip that Rose O'Donnell saw that said that she read a whole show about it. This is called the second Barbara Streisand album, which she cleverly called the second Barbara Streisand album, and it's near the end, and she's singing this one phrase. Now, I'm going to analyze this. She goes, my man is gone, and when your man is gone, your world just falls apart. Okay, so I'm doing a masterclass here in Durham, and a lot of classical singers will over-enunciate. They'll go, your world just falls apart. And it makes me crazy, because in real life, you don't go, I'm devastated. My world is falling apart. No one says that. So when a singer over-enunciates, it separates the audience from the singer. They go, oh, you're not a real person going through emotion. You're a classical singer that trained your voice. So I do not agree with over-enunciating. Neither does Barbara. Sort of. She doesn't go, your world just falls apart. What a normal person would do to make it sound good, they go, your world just falls apart. They'd be real. They kind of modify it, make it kind of D, make it not really, whatever. Okay. What Barbara does is she doesn't hit the T and overemphasize it. No, she changes it literally to a D and overemphasizes that. So now it actually makes no sense. She goes, your world just falls apart. Duh. So then it's like, wait, it's not a word. And then it's over. And I'm sure they were like, Barbara, that's not a word. She's like, really? Keep it. Sell it. That's what I'm obsessed with. Like, no one made her do a take two because they're all terrified of her. So listen to this. So it's not a T, it is a D, and it's overemphasized. This is not doctor. This is the real thing. Hit it, please. We'll hear it twice.
Your world just falls apart. So
one more time because of the chutzpah.
Your world just falls apart.
So it's a T.
It's the wrong word.
It's not even a word. There's no word like that.
Yeah, but now you do this publicly.
Yes.
What does Barbara Streisand think of that?
You know, almost everyone that I deconstruct knows that I do it. I've gotten so many thankful letters from Broadway stars. she's the only one. I know her director, and he's like, I haven't really played it for her because we don't quite know what mood she's ever going to be in. So she's the only one I haven't ventured to find out, hey, do you think it's funny? Because I think she may stick James Brolin on me and kick my arse. Am I allowed to say arse on NPR?
You can say that, yeah. Okay. And don't worry, nobody's listening.
Excellent.
Listen, so last question. Advice to the kids, Seth.
Advice to the kids. Please, God, broaden your horizons. When I was a child, we didn't have YouTube. I would go to the library, and I would take out albums, and I would listen to them, and I would become interested in certain songs, other songs I think were bad. That was it. Nowadays, I do these master classes. Kids are singing the one song by Sutton Foster from Little Women, Astonishing, over and over again. This one song, Astonishing. I'm like, you have YouTube. You have so many ways of finding all this music that you can discover and love. Stop being lazy and start listening to more than one singer over and over again. So that's my advice. Broaden your horizons.
Seth Rudetsky is a Broadway actor, comedian, and musical director. Thanks so much for being on the program, Seth.
Thank you. And thank you, NPR.
His one-man show, Deconstructing Broadway, is on stage at PSI Theater at the Durham Arts Council tonight, 8 o'clock. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. A program that is produced by Laura Lee, Megan Modafferi, Anita Rao, and Will Michaels. Our intern, Charlie Shelton. Robin Copley is the technical director. Brent Wolf, the news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.